On today's episode of Good Word with Goodwill, Amin El Hassan joins us to talk about buyers and sellers headed into the trade dead season and Zion Williamson's diet and the end of the Golden State dynasty. All that and much more on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word, y'all. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports. We're part of the Ball Don't Lie Network. Get us wherever you get your podcast. We are also on YouTube. And if you see us on YouTube, you see the gentleman sitting next to me or on the other side of the screen, the Hate Hard King himself. He was the first two-time guest on the Good Word with Goodwill podcast. I bet you didn't know that, I mean. And now he's the first three-time guest on this podcast. Amin El Hassan was a member of the Suns front office for 7 years, and then he went to ESPN, and now he's a member of the Dan Lebatard like shipping container.
Not in the shipping container.
You're not in the shipping container.
I don't produce that show, man. Shipping container is just the producers. I'm not a producer.
He's a part of the Dan Lebatard and Friends Network, he also gets daily thoughts on the Eyeball podcast with Charlotte Wilder, and of course, his Cinephobe podcast as well, if you like movies. Amin El Hassan, Amin, thanks so much for joining us, man. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing good. I just have one piece of feedback for you on your intro. You said, I'm Vincent Goodwill, senior writer on Yahoo, but you said it so fast, I thought you said Vincent Goodwill Senior, and I said, damn! I have been gone for a while. This man that had a whole son and everything.
Well, funny thing, my daddy's name is that, so I will never be Vincent Goodwill Senior, even if I do have a kid somewhere out here. Amin is here, of course, to join us because December 15th just passed, which means a whole bunch of NBA players are now able to be traded. And I got like a list of teams that I want to get to, and I want to hear Amin's thoughts on whether they should be buyers, sellers, you know, and I'm very curious about that. But before we begin, because Amin has so much experience in Phoenix, I feel like that's a great place to start. Mm-hmm. Bradley Beal, who had a back issue,
yep,
and missed a bunch of games in November, missed a bunch of games in December. He only played 3 games in November, 3 in December. He comes out against the Knicks. Dante DiVincenzo runs under his leg, boom, ankle out. What first possession of the game? So now he's going to be out, it seems like, at least 3 weeks. Amin, is he going to play 3 games in January?
I feel bad for him because it's not, none of this is his fault, right? This is, you talk about the back injury in particular, I've had that same condition, and it's crazy the amount of work you have to put in just to feel semi kind of operative, and then to do all that work, you know, away from the team by yourself and the corrective exercises and all the little different things. And you get back on the floor and literally on the first possession, because of a crazy closeout, you step on someone's foot and now you're out for a different reason, but all these things are conjoined, right? You are compromised because of, you know, your certain injuries. And it's just, you got to go back to a rehab process. And, you know, he's already been out for so long during the season. At this point, the concern goes beyond physically, how is he, to mentally, how is he? Because it's a tough thing to be hurt and almost come back. And literally immediately after you come back, you get hurt again. It reminds me of Klay Thompson, obviously not to the extent of devastating injury, but Klay tore his ACL and is like, okay, I'm about to come back, and then he ruptured his Achilles, and that's
right.
You know, we saw the impact on that. I think mentally was devastating beyond the physical recovery.
Yeah, and that experiment won't work. Like some teams can sustain an injury to a star level player. The Phoenix Suns are the one team who cannot sustain an injury to Devin Booker or Kevin Durant or Bradley Beal. And Brad is clearly the third person there. But they can't sustain an injury to him and this thing work, because behind him, you just got a bunch of veteran minimum guys and guys that whose success will be based off the attention that KD and Devin and Brad command. None of those guys are equipped or built to be a third option. Like, this can't work. And I don't know it can work anyway, but it can't work if one of those guys isn't healthy.
Yeah, I mean, it goes beyond that. I mean, first of all, when you talk, forget third option, many of their rotation guys would be 8th, 9th, or 10th men on other teams. The problem is their entire bench is 8th, 9th, and 10th men. It's not a six-man here or a seven-man there or perhaps a starter somewhere. These are all kind of fringe rotation-type players who are getting major minutes on a nightly basis. The other thing is what Brad brings to the table, because remember, this team really doesn't have a pure point guard. I know they just picked up Théo Maledon on waivers, but in terms of a guy who goes out there and sets people up, right now it's Devin Booker. And I always love making this distinction. Can and should. Can Devin Booker play a point guard-esque role very well? Yes. Should he? Is that the best use of his abilities full-time? Probably not. And Brad was supposed to be another guy who can do that so that we can all kind of, sometimes I'm a playmaker, sometimes I'm a play terminator, and we're all kind of fluid through this. But now it's turned into, it's kind of Book. He's got to do all of this. And not having Brad Beal out there hurts their ability to be more fluid like that.
Yeah, it does. And that's a great point, that you've got a bunch of guys that you're asking to play above what they should be on any other team in the league. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You're asking certain guys to step into roles that they're underqualified for.
Like
guys who can... underqualified for it. They can make an impact. They can play above their heads, but you shouldn't be asking them to do that through the meat of the season. So, I mean, you are familiar with Phoenix. You are also super familiar with the Miami Heat because of the time that you spend down there.
Mm-hmm.
Bam Adebayo is out. Tyler Hero is out. They're both scheduled to come back actually today against the Minnesota Timberwolves, right? Jimmy Butler hit the game winner against the Chicago Bulls over the weekend. I bet you Jimmy Butler, there was no happier man on earth than Jimmy Butler walking down Kobe White, hitting that step back game winner against his old team. But I look at the Heat.
Uh-huh.
What's that? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, Jason Jackson told me this yesterday. He said when they lost to the Knicks in the in-season tournament a few weeks ago, that was a game where they led big and the Knicks made this big comeback, and then Jimmy had an opportunity to win the game on a three, and he missed the three. He told Jason Jackson, that ain't going to happen again. The next time I'm in that situation, I'm taking that shot and I'm making that shot. And so fast forward to Saturday night, he did it. And I guess, I don't know who on the internet or who maybe at the league office was quick with it, but someone actually spliced the quote with the shot. And it was like, yeah, that was the next opportunity he had. He took it and he made it.
That's Jimmy Butler never forgets. I'll just tell you that. I mean, he never forgets. He never forgets an opportunity to stick it in your face. And he certainly will never forget an opportunity to stick it in the faces of the Chicago Bulls or Minnesota Timberwolves or Philadelphia 76ers. He lives for those moments. So with the Heat, I mean, they are mid at everything. Middle in the road. Offensive efficiency, middle of the road, defensive efficiency. And they are literally, not to get too nerdy here, but they are $28,000 below the tax line.
Yes.
And you have Kyle Lowry making $29.6 million. I would be venturing to guarantee they're going to move him, right? Last year of his contract.
Yes.
10-4-4, you know what I mean? Like, he gives you some veteran stuff, but for $30 million, you're going to need more, especially in this Eastern Conference. What do you think they should be looking to go after? Who, if you could pinpoint a player, I'm not sure if you can, but maybe the profile of a player that you think the Miami Heat should be going to look after if they have Kyle Lowry and his expiring contract to dangle out there?
So there's a couple of things going on. I think one, they would point to, we haven't been healthy. You mentioned Bam has been out with that hip injury for a while. Hero has been out for even longer than that. They've also, Haywood Highsmith has also been out, and he's been kind of a very important rotation. I mean, he was starting at the beginning of the year for them. Caleb Martin missed the beginning of the year, he's come back, and now he's starting to get back into form. So they're going to say, look, man, we don't even know what we have. And to that point, they started the season terribly offensively. The fact that they've reached this point here where they are middle of the road offensively actually represents a large boost over the last month or so. Now, the problem becomes, you're right, Kyle Lowry for $30 million, nobody wants that. But it's not like he's a non-contributor for them. He's one of their better three-point shooters. He does playmake, and he is a good locker room leader and on-court leader. You can see him instructing Hawkes and some of the other younger guys where to be, where to go. You know, the Heat play a lot of young, inexperienced players. Jamal Kane, Orlando Robinson. Again, a lot of that is by necessity because of the injuries. But the reality is this is a team that isn't afraid to rely on non-brand name players. And I think part of that is having someone like Kyle who can be helpful in a way that is like not Jimmy Butler levels. And what I mean by that is, Vinny, you know, Jimmy knows one way, and that's the rod, right? And
right.
Kyle, sometimes a rod, sometimes a carrot, but you need that. You need someone who can throw that changeup. You can't have a locker room just full of assholes all the time. Right. Having said that, if there's an opportunity to get yourself some breathing room under the tax threshold, for sure, but also to upgrade your team. And for me, I would say that this team defensively is fine. I know the numbers are they're 13th or 14th or whatever right now. They're fine defensively. They execute. They're well coached. They have personnel that can defend. To me, the offense is always going to be the question.
Yeah.
Even as, you know, we got two guys coming back who are pretty integral to that offense. This team, other than Jimmy Butler, there's not really a reliable, I can get you 25 every single night kind of guy. And even Jimmy picks and chooses when he wants to do that. So for me, the profile of a picture of a player is going to be someone who can be an offensive, can get it outside the system, because Spo's got a great offense, but it's like at some point, every team needs a guy that just says, fuck it. Like, I know what you called. I'm going to do this. And other than Jimmy, I don't think they really have that. I mean, Tyler Hero, maybe, but I think someone who's got an ability to get to the free throw line and/or get a surefire bucket, that's a priority. Now, once you say that, the names on the list become very interesting, but I don't know if Kyle Lowry alone is enough to make that happen. I think you then start talking about adding trade assets to make that happen. Mm-hmm. If you do that, does that preclude you from other bigger deals down the line?
You mean a bigger deal like Donovan Mitchell? Is that what you're trying to, you know, is that what you're trying to?
Like Donovan Mitchell, like maybe another player from the Central Division whose name starts with a D, who came from a Western Conference Northwest Division team recently, who may or may not be having the time of his life playing for the team he's playing for right now. I don't know. You don't know. These things change very quickly. These things happen very quickly.
They do change very quickly. That is an interesting thing you brought up, because that team was not on said list, okay? And we don't necessarily have to do that. But the thing you brought up was critical. For those who don't know, the Heat are the best three-point shooting team in the NBA. They're shooting 39% from three, which means you've got a lot of dudes who have the green light. You got a lot of dudes hitting a lot of shots, which also means you can afford to let one go if it comes to it. If you need to package Kyle Lowry with someone else, you have the depth and you have, you know, Heat culture, we make fun of it, people make fun of it and everything else. But they've shown that they know how to identify and develop players who will fit in said program while also making them attractive enough for another team to believe, hey, if we need to, we can go and get said player. Now, another team that I think is really interesting is maybe not as sexy, I mean, is a team that's steady knocking on the door in the Western Conference. Like, and you look at the Western Conference standings, it looks like NBA Live, like it looks like an NBA Live game. Like one of those games where you simulate for 20 years down the line and none of the teams look familiar because it's not the Lakers at the top and it's not Golden State and it's not the brand names that we've expected. The Sacramento Kings won 50 games last year and got knocked down the first round. Their three best players are De'Aaron Fox, Domas Sabonis, and Keegan Murray. They share the ball. They shoot a lot of threes. I think they should be looking to upgrade. I think they should be calling the Chicago Bulls and saying, Zach LaVine, we need a guy that can go get us a bucket. We know you're making 40, 43, 46, 49. Wow. You're on that Supermax contract going into 26, 27. But if we're going to take the next step in the Western Conference, that's a team we should be calling. Am I wrong in thinking that Sacramento should be big-time buyers here? Because I don't know, based off of, remember how Golden State played Sabonis basically out of his effectiveness in the first round of the playoffs last year, and you could withstand De'Aaron Fox doing what De'Aaron Fox did. That's the same formula teams are going to use no matter what team that's going against in the playoffs this year, unless they have personnel changes.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. First of all, that's not just Golden State, that's Draymond Green, who, for whatever jokes and stuff that people want to make, the guy's still elite, top 0.1% defender in basketball. And so we've seen him do that and stymie other great offensive bigs. I've seen him do to Anthony Davis, just completely take him out of his element because he knows every trick in the book and he's playing on all of your tendencies. And at the same time, Sabonis, I know he had some playoff experience, but I mean, this is a different animal. It's a different beast coming in as a 3 seed or whatever than coming in as an 8 seed and just showing good face in Indiana. So I think that you got to point that out. They also lost in 7 games. So that's and at the time, Steph Curry had a historic Game 7 performance. So there are some elements there where I'm like, I don't know if I would say if I'm Sacramento, oh, this clearly ain't working, right? The other part of that also is I think their offseason shows you that they like what they have and they're willing to wait on that development rather than say, we gotta boost this. Having said that, having another guy who could do that, I'm not opposed to that. I think that could help them. Zach LaVine, though, brings a completely different kind of complication when you look at his contract, the amount of money owed, the amount of years owed. That kind of flies in the face of their gradual buildup of not only this roster, but also this payroll. It would boost them into a level and a zone that I think indicates a readiness that I don't know they even think they have right now to compete for a championship.
Now, that makes sense. That makes sense because De'Aaron Fox turned down his extension, $100 million extension, because if he makes All-NBA this year, he will be eligible for something far greater than that. I don't know the exact numbers, but it's financially feasible for him to turn down said extension, wait, and see how this season plays out. Another team that I think Amin will love to talk about, y'all, is a place that I'm getting on a plane to go in the next couple hours. I am going to New Orleans. I am going to see the battle of the what could have been, right? John Morant, unless he gets suspended in the next few hours, John Morant and Zion Williamson, right? The Pelicans, they are $4 million over the tax bill. This is in New Orleans, okay? They're what, 15 and 11? They're right around like that middle pack. They're above the play-in line in the Western Conference. But because you've got Zion there, like this team always feels like they're going to underachieve to a certain degree. Brandon Ingram is an easy carrot sort of throw out there because his contract is up after next year. And because they're $4 million over the tax line and they're in New Orleans, I would look at them and say, hey, are y'all trying to get under that tax line? Because New Orleans does not seem like the type of market that would seem to be one of the 10, because there's 10 teams that are above the tax line. New Orleans is one of those teams that's like, eh, y'all?
I mean, look, yes, they're not a market that can withstand an extended amount of time in the luxury tax. Again, this is a team that it's always interesting. The Pelicans are the kind of team I call them like Florida basketball, right? Or like Texas basketball. There are some schools We're like, this is a football school. And if the basketball team does well, then yay, right? Like, your job is to just not embarrass us. Florida State basketball, like I said, Duke football. You know, there's some places where it's just like, you know, you understand you're standing as a sport. You are the second sport.
Right.
The Raptors, believe it or not, are like that because it's all about the Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs are the moneymaker. And then the Raptors just don't embarrass us, right? I'll give you a little money here and there, but I can't be like, what the hell? How much did we spend on Raptors? Like, so the Pelicans are the same way, except Toronto is in a megapolis market that can withstand, can draw millions and millions of dollars from surrounding places. New Orleans, not so much, a very small market. Limited amount of businesses, Fortune 500 businesses based out of there. So corporate sponsorship, all the things that you need to kind of supplement perhaps a heftier bill. New Orleans is the type of place that, look, we'll pay a luxury tax if you're telling us we're in the mix for a championship. Now, again, they'll go back and say C.J. McCollum missed a bunch of time. Larry Nance Jr. is one of their best bigs off the bench, has missed a bunch of time. So they haven't quite put it all together, but this whole thing was predicated on Zion seeing the light. Now, after a crazy summer of all types of craziness, he's going to take this thing seriously. He had his aha wake-up moment, and I'm watching him, and I'm like, I don't know if he woke up yet. I think he's kind of, some recidivism is happening there vis-a-vis diet and conditioning. And this was before that report came out. This is before Stephen A. Smith went on his soliloquy where he said he could see his gut at the free throw line, which, man.
that is wild. We just don't like fat people. Like, can we just, like...
What's that?
We just don't like fat people.
No, I don't. That has nothing to do with it. Fat people? Oh, love fat. Love all people.
I'm not saying you. I'm saying we as a
country, as a society. Yes. Fat athlete. That's the one we have a problem with. You work out for a living. You have people either in your employ or employed by the team telling you, don't eat this. Eat that. Don't eat. You know what? I'll make it for you. Here. Eat it. It's not even like, hey, stay away from it. It's like, I'm taking a guest workout. I'm making you your meals. At some point, because this isn't college or high school, there's no curfews, there's no lights out. These are grown men. You do whatever the hell you want. Like the real world. Yeah, I can do whatever the hell I want, but then there are consequences. There are consequences to my actions. And for him, I don't know if he's understanding the consequences. Vinny, when I watch him play, he doesn't have the same explosion he had two or three years ago.
No.
This isn't a 30-year-old we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen. Right? This is a guy who's, well, he was 19 when he came out in 2019. So he's, what, 24? 23 now?
Yep, 24.
You can't have started to lose your pop before your prime. 24?
Yeah.
And again, all of these things are related. And when you live a life of denial, man, that ain't had nothing to do with that. It was because of this.
He's 23. My bad. He's 23. But your point. Even younger.
Right. Even younger, right? You live a life of denial, and then you have people around you who are clearly enabling it. And in some ways, I'm like, we're doing you a favor, bro, by shaming you. We're doing you a favor by shaming you. Because imagine if that didn't exist. Imagine if that, the public being a pariah for being fat, didn't exist for him. He'd go to town. And the only reason why we go so hard on him, I'm convinced of this, is because we all know that fucker's good, man. He's a great player. He is Hall of Fame caliber if he can stay healthy and not continue to deteriorate. He's a great player. Don't throw it away for soda and fried food and like just the dumbest. I almost like rather you have a drug problem than this.
Don't say
like,
that.
Like, come on.
You can't get rid, like a drug problem is much harder to get rid of.
Sure, but then I could understand it. Then I could understand it. It's like, oh, damn. Yeah, man, like it's messed up and the lifestyle and these things get available to you and then it's hard to shake after. I can understand that. You telling me you go to a restaurant, you can't just, water? I'm drinking water tonight, guys. Imagine that, Vinny. Imagine being in agony over like, only water? Just, you can put a little lemon in it. Oh, it's got no flavor. Like, imagine the thing that you drink to quench your thirst has to have flavor to it. Has to have some tang, some sugar to it. It's unnecessary, man. It's the silliest way to blow a golden opportunity.
Yeah, and I think if you get to the point where Shaq and Barkley are coming at you on national TV, on the league's marquee broadcast, where they know it's their job to promote everything about basketball and they turn it into a PSA about you and your lifestyle because they feel like you're throwing your career away. To get Shaq and Chuck on the same thing, on the same page, considering the fact that those are the two players who know what it's like to struggle with weight and know there what it's like go. To get themselves
That's
right.
That's why.
That says a lot.
That's why. It's different when it's me, when it's Stephen A. Smith, when it's you. We're not athletes. Right. But more importantly, we're not people who legit, every little calorie I take might explode on me in a way that some other people burn. Like, Shaq and Chuck are two guys who had the weight issues, who were elite, Hall of Fame, best ever players. So they're talking from a place of experience. You don't want to listen to me? You don't like my jokes? That's fine, man. But them two, you got to listen to because they know. Mm-hmm. They know what this looks like. They know the temptations. They know what's around, what's swirling around them. And like that to me should be the most credible sources of criticism to him. You don't have to listen to any of us. You can tune the internet out. You can tune out all the podcasts, all the talking heads. You can't tune them out because they know where you've been. And they've been to the places that you want to be. You want to be an MVP. You want to be a champion. You want to be a Hall of Famer. You want to be a top 100 when they have that list. They're going to be on all of those, right? You've got to figure out how to avoid some of the pitfalls that they didn't, but also avoid the pitfalls that they did avoid. Because if you remember, look at 93 Chuck. He didn't look fat. Look at 2000 Shaq. He didn't look fat.
No.
Right? Like, they had their moments when it was like, no, I'm doing this, and you're going to witness what it looks like when I'm on top of my diet. And we're waiting to see that for Zion.
Yeah, we're waiting to see that from Zion. And I don't know if we're actually going to necessarily get there. Like, you feel kind of sad in a way. Like I said, going to New Orleans to see Ja and to see Zion, the difference in how we talk about both of those players now compared to when they came into the league, I won't say sad. Sad isn't the word.
It is sad.
It's just disappointing.
It is sad. It's not disappointing. Is like, yeah, you guys should know better. But at some point, it evolves beyond disappointment and it turns into, damn, what happened, man?
Right.
Like, it's not even like, you need to do better. It's, what happened? Y'all had it in the palm of your hands. We're looking at an era of unprecedented international dominance at the highest level. Jokic, Embiid, and Giannis just going to be passing, and Luka, just passing this thing around. It's our league. And these two guys who came in the same draft class were supposed to be like the great American hopes. They're going to be the ones battling opposite. And obviously they have history together growing up in the same part of the world. And so they come into the league together. And both guys weren't big AAU guys, right? Like everyone else. These are guys who came from humble beginnings basketball-wise. And now they're going to be the ones that are going to carry this thing. And instead, we got one guy who doesn't know how to turn off Instagram Live, another guy who doesn't know how to turn down thirds, right? It's crazy. It's insane. And I hope what the lesson learned not only by them, but by everybody. This game doesn't stop for anybody, dude.
No,
nobody.
It
moves on. We moved on off of Magic and Bird, early retirements for both of them. We moved off of Michael retiring twice, or three times, I guess. We moved on off of Shaq getting old and fat and hurt all the time. One day we'll move off of LeBron, and there'll be the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. I was talking about this yesterday with Jason Jackson on NBA Radio. When you think about Ja Morant and you think about being away for 25 games, yes. Oh, I love playing basketball and I haven't been able to do that. Sure, that hurts. Yes. Oh, my God, they took 25 games worth of salary. That hurts. Sure. You know what I think hurts more than anything for him? Is turning on the TV during these 25 games. And other than Memphis Grizzlies games, nobody said shit about him. We didn't care anymore. What did we do? Ooh, Tyrese Halliburton. Ooh, that's my new favorite small market point guard.
Right.
That happened quick as shit for Ja. Ja went from, you should be on MVP ballots to, oh, the Tyrese Halliburton dude, he's the next one. That happened like that. And they didn't even say Tyrese Halliburton would draw out. We don't even remember you, bro. And I don't say that to be mean or disparaging or disrespectful. God knows I love his game. I think he's a great player and a great talent. But I'm illustrating. The game don't stop for nobody, man. We keep this thing moving at all times. And so even when you feel like I've reached a place, my spot is reserved. They're not going to give my spot away. Yes, they will. They'll give your spot too. Because the game can't stop. In the words of the late, great Nate Dogg, you can catch the bus if you're running, but the game don't wait.
The game don't wait. No. Think about, and this is a slight detour, think about where we were with Ja a year ago. Like literally 12 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Kyrie was coming off of the anti-Semitic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And his Nike contract was ending, and Nike was putting all their resources into Ja. Ja was taking Kyrie Irving's place as the in the marketplace and in marketing as
marketing
the guy that we're going to put in front of all these 10, 11, 12, 13-year-olds. Like, this is the relatable player that's not the giant, that's not this is a guy that you can feel like that shoe symbolizes something that is more tangible, you know what I mean, as opposed to, you know, LeBron, who just feels like a superhuman in that way.
Yeah.
That was just 12 months ago. Then Shotgun Willies happens. Then the playoffs happen. Everything else, you know, the breathing exercises, all this other stuff, all that stuff happens. And now we're finally just getting back to, oh, Ja Morant's coming back. Oh, I'm curious. Let's see what he does. But you're almost holding your breath, I mean, to see what happens next. You're not
I was gonna say I'm hoping that all of this has shown him his basketball mortality. Has shown him, oh man, it turned on me real quick. And the money's guaranteed, so you got your money. But that's not what I'm talking about. How quick the game just moves off of you. You went from the it girl to like you're not even invited to the party no more, right? You're trying to sneak in through the back patio door. And I'm hoping that kind of experience shifts him, because whether it's Ja, whether it's Zion, whether it's even old Graybeard, Draymond Green, all three of them, in the issues that they've gone through, the one constant, the one consistent, no contrition up until the big moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
For Ja, the big moments happen. We'll see how it goes from here. For Draymond, his big moment is happening right now. We'll see where it goes from here. For Zion, I don't know if that his big moment has happened yet. But no, at every stage, they've got an answer. They've got an excuse. There's none of it that's like, man, I got to do better. Right. I'm messing this thing up. I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. There's no point in that. It's all, well, da, 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 and this and that. No, and, you know, I was under a lot of stress. So like, no. Dude, don't
just
say
own
that
it.
For the therapist. Right?
Yeah, just
you
own
got
it.
To
just own it.
Own it and accept it. It's me. It's my fault. And without that, you're going to keep having this kind of recidivism, this returning back to same mistakes, same issues, same, because you never really fully embrace like, hey, I'm kind of messing up. I'm not saying problem might be too strong of a word. I have a problem, but like,
right.
I'm having issues with this.
Right. No, it's funny because we think about, like you said, all three of those guys are just at different stages, different inflection points of their career. But like you said, they're almost at crossroads. Draymond's at an earlier crossroad. Those guys are at younger crossroads, but they're all equally at defined crossroads. Mm-hmm. I mean, a franchise, I think, that is at a crossroads, a quiet crossroads, is the Atlanta Hawks. Okay? Now, we don't think of the Atlanta Hawks. Like, nobody thinks of the Atlanta Hawks. I know people who ain't been fans of the Atlanta Hawks since they traded Dominique Wilkins. That was damn near 30 years ago. Okay?
Yes.
All right? So, like, I just think the way that they've done things has been messy over the past maybe year and a half. Maybe, well, I guess even longer than that, right? Past several years. It's been very messy, right? And now you've got Quinn Snyder as a coach. Remember, who they brought in mid-season. Something that never happens. You never bring in a new coach in mid-season. Like, you get one chance to make a first impression, and they didn't decide to wait until the end of the season. They decided, we're going to do this right now. We fire Nate McMillan in the middle of the year. All right, cool. See how that's worked out. They're not a good team. Jalen Johnson, I like him, but he's hurt now.
He's hurt.
You get DeJounte Murray and Trae Young. I know some people around the league who said back in 2021, when the Hawks went on their run to the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, the Philly meltdown, it was the pandemic, it was all this stuff. They said, trade Trae Young right now. Because where are you going to go with him? You're not going to go anywhere with him because he doesn't play defense. He dominates the ball, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. All that stuff has come to fruition now. He's on his Supermax deal. This team ain't good. If you're Atlanta, Amin, are you trying to trade Trae Young, or are you trying to maneuver the pieces so that you can maximize whatever you can out of him? Because I don't know if he's not your number one guy. Amin, I don't know what role he plays on an NBA team.
There's a lot to unpack. I would say, first of all, I don't think he can be your number one guy. I would love to see him with a dominant big because I think he could develop a great two-man chemistry with a dominant big. But then this goes back to something else. I had a conversation with someone, a league source, as I like to call them. You don't know where in the league they're from. And we're having a general conversation about who's the most hated player in the NBA by other players. And I said, there's nobody more hated than Rudy Gobert. Because I was trying to figure out, why does everyone hate Rudy Gobert so much? Like, all the players. I'm not talking about fans. I'm not talking about media. I'm not talking I'm talking about players seem to hate Rudy Gobert. They can't stand him. And so the source is like, he's up there, but I wouldn't say he's number one. And I said, really? And I started naming my name, Draymond. I named all these guys, the usual suspects. Mm-hmm. And the source said, there's another guy. And I said, is it Trae Young? And the source said, ding, ding, ding. People don't like Trae Young. Players. Again, I'm not talking about none of us, right? Or coaches. Right. Or players don't seem to like it. And this is the part where I'm spoiled because my basketball growing up basically happened with Steve Nash as a point guard for the Suns.
Yep. Yep.
Point guard is the only position where I think they got to kind of like you. They want to play for you. It's the reason I think it's the difference in Chris Paul being perhaps the greatest point guard of all time and Chris Paul playing for 1, 2, 3, 4, however many teams he's played for, right? It's that right there. It's because they respect Chris Paul. They don't like him. Because his bedside manner is coarse and he burns people out and he's very intense. And I think for Trae is not as good as Chris Paul. So take away like the all-time talent. He's a great player, but he's not Chris Paul level. Right. And then also add to it like, also you're not likable. They got to like you in some way. Because they have to want to play for you as the on-floor general. I think a big man can be an asshole. And everyone just said, that's just him. Point guard, they're going to have to like you. And from what I understand, He's a hard guy to work with.
Yep.
If you're going to build around Trae Young, I think you need another player who is better than him, clearly mm-hmm. better than him. Like mm-hmm. better than him in the way that, like, Karl Anthony Towns looked at Anthony Edwards like, oh, okay. However I felt over the first 7 years of my career, 6 years, no, this guy's got it. I'm, you know what, me over here? Okay, I'm good. I'll be number two. It's got to be that. It's got to be clearly like, oh, it's his team. This ain't my team. I'm just here to be the great number two guy.
Right.
Will that happen in Atlanta? I don't know, because so much of that franchise's identity was centered around this guy. Mm-hmm. And this is the first guy to inject. You know, you talk about, I know, you talk about people in Atlanta who stopped rooting for the Hawks in 94 when they traded Dominique, when they had the best record in the league, by the way, because Pete Babcock mm-hmm. had a theory that you always trade high. And so that was a best record in the league. This guy's killing it. This is high. Let me go get Danny Manning. And Danny Manning will get under the cap and all this other shit. It was a galaxy brain type of move. Yeah, I know people in Atlanta who like gave up on the Hawks. And Trae Young was one of those people who brought people back, even though this team had won 60 games and had the best regular season record in the league and went to the conference finals and all those things. Like that team, those teams did not capture the imagination of Atlanta.
Right.
Like, yeah, it didn't connect like Trae Young did, which, to be fair, is kind of the situation the Timberwolves were in. And I thought, oh, they're never going to get out of this because they built everything around Karl Anthony Towns. And this is our best player and the most exciting player since KG. And I thought he couldn't change because he's like, I run this thing over here. Why would I ever change? And then Anthony Edwards comes along and it's like, everyone's like, oh, that's what a franchise player looks like. I just take that step over. And it's like, so maybe they can acquire someone who can make him feel that way. Or maybe you move him and you get a bunch of stuff for him and you start from there.
I mean, it's funny because if I'm a team, I wonder if I'd want DeJounte Murray first. You know what I mean? Oh, just because it's
without question,
a lower maintenance ball player. Yeah, he's got long money, but he doesn't come with all the things that Trae Young comes with. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was talking to someone yesterday and they were like, man, if I'm playing for a point guard that doesn't play defense, but that point guard connects with me, yeah, I'll take that matchup for him because I know what it means. Yeah, I know what it means for everybody. There's a connectivity there. There's something there. And that's why you see all of Magic Johnson's teammates love him. Mm-hmm. All of Isaiah Thomas's teammates, as complicated mm-hmm. as people think Zeke is, all of those dudes love him, okay? All those dudes love him because they play for him. Steve Nash, who you know really, really well,
yeah.
Same thing. Chris Paul, even though Chris Paul is going to a bunch of different places and kind of, you know, maybe wears out his welcome, he's the guy that's organizing the team dinners on the road. He's the guy that's getting guys together and all those type of things, that's making sure that those players feel something from him. Now, he may be exhausting mm-hmm. at the same time, but there's something there that enables those teams to get better while he's there. Because every team that he's played
for
on
sure.
has gotten better up until basically going to Golden State because he's not running the show there.
For sure. It's always his first year is always his best year because mm-hmm. he gets somewhere and there's two things. One is what you're describing with that leadership of team dinners, and we're doing workouts on off-season workouts. We're all going to meet in Santa Monica. We're going to and having someone who has a clear vision and a strong voice, particularly when you haven't had that before, mm-hmm. is refreshing. Like, this is what we've been dying for: structure, leadership, da da da. And then also on the court, because he's so great at playing basketball and making other people better. It's like, this is the best I've never... He'll say, hey, by the way, if you wait just 1 second before you roll, this thing is going to open up for you. I'm like, oh my God, he's making me see the game in ways I haven't seen before. But the constant nagging and the flipping out over small mistakes, not knowing when to just let that slide and when to be like, no, this is important, treating everything like it's DEFCON 1, it burns people out. But to your point, all of those guys, Steve Nash, Isaiah Thomas, Magic Johnson. By the way, we're not saying you have to be nice guys.
Right.
You just have to know how to connect with people and know when to be nice and when to be not so nice in order to get the desired effect. They have to like you on some level. And I don't know if Trey's doing either of those things, either the off-the-court things of leadership and structure and checking in on people and all that stuff, which it's not fun. No one wants to do that. When people think of leadership, they think of people say, get to the corner, you, come up here. That's some of it. But other stuff is like, hey, big guy, how you feeling?
It's the people stuff. It's the people stuff. It's making somebody feel warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, man. And not all of us are. I'm not a good leader. I'm not good at that. I don't like doing it in any setting. But that doesn't mean it's not needed. And particularly for that position, you have to have some of that. And that's the thing. Right. Now, as far as DeJounte versus Trey, DeJounte is bigger. He's a better defensive player. His shot selection is not as erratic. His money is almost 50% of that of Trey's. You say it's long. I'd rather be paying him 25, 26, 27 than playing 45, 46, 47. Like, that's a damn that's straight. A massive
Absolutely.
Gap. So if you say, I have an opportunity to have DeJounte Murray, it's not just, hey, do I like him more as a player? It's also, oh, I have $20 million more dollars to play around with in a sport where every dollar spent here means a dollar that I can't spend over there. And 20 right. extra million dollars is a lot of money. I can make that happen. I can get two, maybe even three good, really good players off of that.
Yep. And it's funny. We got two more teams to hit. We got 10 more minutes left, or less than 10 minutes. Cleveland and Golden State. And Cleveland, you wouldn't think of Cleveland being a sexy team, and they're not necessarily, but they're an intriguing team because theirs Garland's out for 4 weeks with a broken jaw. Evan Mobley's out for, I think, 6 to 8 with knee surgery. They haven't been as good this season relative to last season when, you know, won 50 games but got knocked down the first round, everything else. That leaves everything on Donovan Mitchell. And Donovan Mitchell has this year and next year left on his contract. You hear the rumblings all the time. What should Cleveland be trying to do right now?
I mean, here's the thing. I would say Cleveland is one of the disappointments of this season, given how they finished 2 years ago, strong, but just barely missing the playoffs because of injuries. They lost in the play-in. Then last year, you're in the top four. You had home court advantage. You lost to the Knicks. But it's like, okay, this is our first time going to the playoffs. We made the big move. We got Donovan Mitchell, et cetera, et cetera. And then this year, you come back and, yeah, those guys have gotten hurt, but that's all fairly recently.
Right.
So for the first 20 games or so, you were basically a 500 team. You're basically breaking even on points allowed and points scored. Even though you made, I thought, two big acquisitions in George Niang and Max Strus to add to the shooting that was an issue for you. So there's a couple of things for me that I look at and I wonder. One is Garland and Mitchell, even last year, never really felt like synergy. It felt like two good players, and sometimes I take over, sometimes he takes over. But I'm not getting that feeling of these guys are elevating each other in their play. Number two is Mobley and Jared Allen. Should be the center points of an elite defense. And the defense is good, right? But is it to the point where it's making up for the offensive clunkiness of having two traditional bigs? I don't feel like it is. I feel like their defense is good, but not elite. And their offense struggles because the court is kind of spaced. So I don't know if this is a case of mismatched personalities, mismatched talents, or just maybe there was a feeling of we've arrived that happened last year that has brought them back down to earth in the same way that happened to the Atlanta Hawks 2 years ago, the same way that happened to the Dallas Mavericks a year ago.
Well, for me, I mean, I felt like this team should have been turning over to Evan Mobley. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like this team should have been turning towards being an Evan Mobley operation. Like, I don't say this lightly. When I say that, I feel like in some way if you watched Tim Duncan his second and third year mm-hmm. at Wake Forest, you would see what Evan Mobley looks like now, considering Evan Mobley spent 1 year in college and Tim Duncan spent four. This would be theoretically Evan Mobley's senior year in college. Mm-hmm. But he was high in the Defensive Player of the Year voting last year. Purports to be just as good this year, assuming, you know, his health and everything else cooperates. Mm-hmm. But I felt like for that team to work, he was going to have to be the centerpiece and everybody else was going to have to be supporting parts. That hasn't happened.
You know what? You know what it's like? You know what it's like? It's like what's happened in Houston, where I don't know if Ime Udoka coming in said Elper Sengun is our best player. Obviously, there's a lot of excitement with Jalen Green and Jabari Smith and all these guys yep. coming in. But really quickly, they realized, oh, shit, that's our best player right there. We're going to play through him. Yep. And playing through him, you see how everything else not only gets better, they're a better team, but everything gets easier for everybody.
Yeah.
And they're all buying in. Now, it was easy for him to do that coming in because team was trash last year, right?
Right, right.
Can JB Bickerstaff convince all-star players, hey, by the way, I know you guys have great scrapbooks. I'm telling you, we have to reimagine how we do all this stuff, and it's got to go through him. That's a tough sell job, man. That ain't an easy sell job, but I think you might be right.
Yeah, I don't know if he has the dominant personality to walk into the locker room and say, hey, we're running everything here. You know what I mean? Like, you're running everything on this part of the block, and I'm getting the ball. Like, that takes a certain personality and a certain aggressiveness and a certain and comfort level in the locker room and in your own voice. I'm not sure that he's necessarily there, but I think his game is there. Last thing, I mean, Golden State. Draymond Green aside, they are $200 million deep into the tax. They do not look like, we can say whatever we want to say. Steve Kerr is on the last year of his deal. Klay Thompson wants a deal and is giving up, you know, career low numbers. Chris Paul. Like, it doesn't look like anything has worked for them. I can't think of, like, that Jordan Poole punch by Draymond Green, that had sent Jordan Poole going in a different direction. That had sent Golden State going a different direction. Nothing has gone well from that moment for that franchise. And now they're facing a huge luxury tax bill. Do you see them riding this out and waiting until the offseason to make changes? Or do you see them trying to make changes midstream to figure this out?
I think the big thing is, what are the changes that are available to them to make? What are the design? Yeah. I mean, they've kind of exhausted every last bit of draft capital / assets to sell on. The reality is, when they won a championship and they had an ability perhaps to go out and get a Pascal Siakam or something, like take those young guys who performed admirably in that playoff run, turn them into another dominant all-star type player with a personality that would fit in perfectly with what they're trying to do there. That was the opportunity. Instead, they try to play cute. They said, we don't need our vets. Goodbye, Gary Payton. Goodbye, Bielitsa. Goodbye, Otto Porter. Hello, Kuminga and Moody and Wiseman. You guys are going to step in and just be ready to contribute now and Jordan Poole, based on what happened. And last year, we saw those guys were not ready and we saw further erosion of their trade value. And then, you know, obviously paying Poole and all. It was a mismanaged situation, I would say. They did not plan appropriately. And so now you're asking me, what can they do? And other than get healthy, I mean, what are the guys that people would take a flyer on? Kuminga, Moody, yes. What, Chris Paul, because his contract is... it's not guaranteed at all next year.
Right.
It's tough. It's a tough sell if you're trying to get talent, like push us forward talent in there. I think they almost have to ride it out, last dance style. And then at the end of the year, everyone's going to have to reevaluate where they are and, you know, what we're going to do. But I mean, this is a team that last year, when their starting five was healthy, had the best net rating in the entire league. But Andrew Wiggins doesn't seem to be like himself anymore. Klay Thompson doesn't seem to be like himself anymore. Draymond Green can't stay on the floor. Like, the only guys you can really count on are Steph and Kevon Looney on that roster, like night in, night out.
And even Kevon Looney has been played off the floor a few times. Yep. Like it's funny. Like, this is how we have a very skewed view of how dynasties and championship teams are supposed to come to an end. Because LeBron James, whenever he got sick of a championship team, he went off and went somewhere else, right? And created his own championship team somewhere else. He did it three whole times, y'all. So we have a skewed view of what it's supposed to look like. This is what it looks like everywhere, except Michael Jordan retired. Like, Larry Bird Magic Johnson retired.
They all came crashing down, man.
They like, all, it looks ugly.
Like that, the
it's
98
pain,
Bulls
it's
won
painful.
The, 98 Bulls won the title, and but that documentary is all about how this was going down in flames one way or another.
Yeah.
Despite it all. Like, there was no universe. Think about this. It won three titles in a row. Six out of the last eight. And there was no universe where it's like, all right, let's do it one more year. Everybody was done. Scotty's like, I don't give a fuck, I'm out of here. Phil was done. Jerry Krause was done. Mike was like, I don't want to be here if all like new coaches and new people. It was over, dude. It was going to be what it was going to be. And then they got either win or lose. And that's what I think made that 98 Bulls season so special, right? The way it ended. What, you know, them.
It was also a miracle that they won. I mean, like, when you look at it in hindsight, it was a near miracle that with all the things that they had swirling around them, that they won. We didn't think of it at the time. Like, we knew it was, the last dance and everything else. But when you look at the intricacies of everything that had happened at that time, it was remarkable that Michael Jordan had dragged that team to the finish line, because Dennis Rodman was done after that.
Yeah.
Scottie Pippen was done being a all-star player after that. None of those other guys really became to make an impact anywhere else at that point. Jerry Krause saved Michael Jordan from having a one on his finals record, except Michael Jordan ain't trying to hear that. You know what I mean? Like, it. But to the point, championship teams that are no longer championship teams can give you a night. On a night, they can sound and look and play as good as anybody, but they cannot sustain it for weeks and months, let alone playoff rounds. And I think this is the natural course of order for what's going to happen with the Golden State Warriors. Now, granted, they've had a really tough schedule. They're going to play really light, so maybe they can get things together. But as far as them being a team that can go to the finals, I can't see that happening anymore.
Having said that, if I'm them, I ride it out till the end.
You have
They're going to put us in the ground. I'm not. That's the one thing. I think if Jerry Reinsdorf and Jerry Krause had it over again, look, if they're going to leave, let them leave. But don't break this thing up. Don't be the reason everybody's leaving.
Right.
And so I think the same thing here. It's like, it might end up, Clay might say, to hell with this, I'm gone, right? I'm going somewhere else. Steph might say, you know what? I do want to play for the Charlotte Hornets, trade me. Like, that might, those things might happen. But, and maybe if you're proactive, you could get more quote unquote asset value than instead of waiting for them to but I think when you had the history that they've had and the success that they've had, you owe it to just be like, you know what? I'll take that risk. Push it as far as it goes. When the wheels fall off and everything, then it's like, all right, well, we got the absolute most out of this experience that we could have.
It's going to be painful either way. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the great Amin L. Hassan. If you like hearing his voice, don't forget he's part of the Dan Le Batard and Friends Network. He's also on SiriusXM NBA Radio, where sometimes they will put us on a show together and we actually burn the studio down because we talk about things much less civilized than we do on this here podcast. That is all we have for you today. Thanks to producer John and everybody on the team that works really hard on making this podcast happen. I will be back for another episode of The Good Word on Wednesday. Until then, everybody be safe.